Describe that room for us. How nasty is that room? You've been in that room since Monday.
I've been in this sweater since Monday, too. I did shower once, but it's my favorite sweater. So
you're the foulest among us, though, if it comes to it's either you or me in terms of spending 3 days in a room, right? No one else on this show is going to rival who's well, Stugatz might come pretty close in terms of just being foul, no?
Probably. I would say you, Chris, and I'm a solid third on this list. There's no doubt about it. But you guys are ahead of me. Make no mistake about it. Both of you are ahead of me, okay?
So it's just a fat thing, like fat people alone
in a room?
Yeah,
pretty much.
It feels like, yes, you can't leave them alone because they're going to have rappers all over the floor. Ding-dong rappers, I guess, is what it is. I'm not sure what everyone's doing there, but I'm pretty sure that's what they're doing.
I love Sugach just throwing out those insults when I think he's legitimately gained 15 pounds in the last 2 weeks.
Why don't you share with the shipping container and the audience how you describe my stomach right now to me?
Just like a pregnant baby bump. It's massive. Go ahead, stand up for Dan. Show him your profile, Sugats.
Are you doing something different? Is there something different being done where you... Because
the thing is massive, that gut.
A lot of late night snacking, I got to be honest with you. Like the sleeping patterns are off. I go to sleep. Like I'll take a nap late afternoon. I wake up. I can't go back to sleep again. And then I'm eating peanut M&Ms. It's just midnight.
Do you know
how
close we are to being able to be honest about your midnight snacking? Do you know how close? We're about a month away from being able to be honest about how it is that you hit the peanut M&Ms.
And it's timing up with me just being able to crack the code. I'm on to you.
Did you guys have anything locally that you wanted to talk about? Because we've been taping this unbeknownst to you for the last 5 minutes. Is there anything locally that you guys are interested in? Because I got some national stuff, like Tom Brenneman ending up in Puerto Rico doing games is straight out of Eastbound and Down. It's straight out of Kenny Power.
Damn, I want to hear all about that. There's one local topic that is kind of polarized South Florida Twitter, and it's the James Harden stuff. And I just find it so fascinating. Look, James Harden isn't trying to force his way to Miami. Because culturally, I think Brooklyn's a much better fit for him. And earlier this week, we got into the whole culture versus counterculture thing that's building.
It's such a good story, though, Mike, because Ira Winderman wrote about this. He wrote about the idea of what it would cost to get Harden, and Hero would be in that package, obviously. But because then your threesome would be Bam, Jimmy Butler, and James Harden. And you've got a threesome that's pretty damn good.
It's as good as any threesome in the league.
Yeah. James Harden is ball dominant, but you know Jimmy and Bam can play with anybody, right? So it's an interesting thing. This on the day that Tyler Hero is ranked by ESPN the 59th best player in the league ahead of someone like Blake Griffin already.
Do you think Jimmy enjoyed being the number one guy taking a team to the NBA Finals where Jimmy would be okay? Because, Mike, that felt good. A lot of people question whether Jimmy Butler could do that or not, and he did it, and he played exceptional while doing it.
I didn't think he was capable of that, Stugatz, because he is so entrenched in his persona as being the guy who doesn't have to be that.
Right, and so I'm just wondering, Mike, as a Heat fan, do you have any concern that bringing someone like James Harden in is going to have a negative impact somehow on Jimmy Butler?
I fear that it would have a negative impact, but not because Jimmy Butler liked being the man. Although, given the awesome vacation and now the starlet he's reportedly linked to, it must have been pretty good to be Jimmy Butler in defeat.
Casual. The publicist of the starlet saying that is merely a casual relationship. So they're straight banging.
Wasn't expecting that.
Wow.
So,
isn't that what makes it funny? I think
straight banging.
I don't think we've had a funnier moment in the last 2 months than Billy at the end of the show.
We just did now.
You want to believe him? Caught everybody by surprise. I Jimmy Butler is honestly not a selfish player on the court. The accolades are cool, and I'm sure he was feeling himself a little bit this offseason, and everybody gave him respect because his star absolutely rose. But winning, it's legit with Jimmy Butler. The sacrifices for winning, everything. And when you say Bam
he's
and Jimmy,
already in the gym. He's already showed up. He's already putting up shots.
Well, they all have to be now.
No, but at 3:30 in the morning, he's doing all that stuff that Jimmy Butler does. When he was in the bubble, he was waking people up, bouncing a basketball in his hotel.
But when you say they can play with anybody, Jimmy and Bam specifically, I agree with you stylistically. However, there is a real cultural thing here because James Harden, no one calls him Jimmy Harden, James Harden is going to be out at 3 a.m., but he's not going to be in the gym. He's going to be at the club. Like, that is something that is diametrically opposed to what the Miami Heat, I know it was a bubble setting.
This is a bad city.
But the culture helped.
This is a bad city for James Harden.
But doesn't Riley and Spo say to him, hey, you were in Houston, you wanted out, you wanted to go somewhere else, that somewhere else is here, knock it off. Isn't that the culture?
Wait a minute, do you see anything in James Harden's present behavior that suggests to you that Riley and Spoelstra saying anything to him would matter?
But that is the culture, right? You come here and you become your best self nutritionally, but some people are too knucklehead for it to actually crack. Although you've had buy-in from like world-class knuckleheads like Dion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside.
Contract year.
Yeah.
Needing to get to the money, not already having arrived at the money.
Ham cheese.
Which is a major concern. So
what's the argument, though? Help me understand what's happening on Twitter. Instead of doing pieces fitting or chemistry stuff or ego stuff or culture stuff, what is it? Do Heat fans want him? Because what I have found, look, we've been doing this long enough, Stugatz. No, everybody wants to get James Harden and not give up anything for him. Like, I'll give you Olynyk. Like, it's the way that Heat fans, especially after a finals run. So I'm imagining these people are objecting to Hero thrown into the deal.
I saw a poll from a member of Heat Twitter that's just like, in a vacuum, do you want James Harden on the Miami Heat? And that's not even mentioning what you'd have to give up in assets. And it was like 65% no.
Okay, but this happens all the time with runs, man. Mike, we're all old enough to remember Wade, Caron Butler, and Brian Grant being 42-40. They barely won any games during the regular season on the road, and nobody wanted to trade him for Shaq. Like,
yeah,
that's a ridiculous thing that actually happened in our lifetime.
It was a trade that hurt, absolutely.
That hurt, and the Miami Heat pushed their entire roster over – to where was Shaq at the time? Phoenix, Lakers?
Shaq was with the Lakers.
So push everything to the front of the table and like take anybody but Wade. Anybody but Wade.
I believe it was a trade born of Pat Riley kind of inquiring about the head coaching job.
It was. No, he was there. He flew in for a wine, a bunch of wine with Kupchak, and they were asking him about taking over the franchise, and he left with Shaq. Is what ended up happening. But I remember that happening, Stugatz. And so you're always going to get that, okay? Now, but let's put that off to the side. You're not going to get James Harden for nothing. He is an MVP of a league. And we can argue back and forth about whether you'd want to give Tyler Hero up for James Harden. I would do that in a second because I'm not presuming that Tyler Hero is going to become MVP of the league kind of good.
Correct. I'm with you.
But many of you, I understand if you want to object to that because you believe in promise and you believe it could be better than Devin Booker and you believe you have a team that's going to make it to the finals 10 straight years, even though I already think that the Nets are better just if they're healthy.
The only concern I have with James Harden is what we've already discussed. Is James Harden going to, are we going to get the best James Harden down here in Miami? Can he kind of subscribe to that Heat culture?
So what Dan's saying is what always happens, right? Whenever any free agent is available, everyone thinks that the Heat are going to get them and they're going to get them for nothing. Like, oh, we'll just throw in a BJ Johnson, Myers Leonard, and some random, like Chris Silva, and we're going to get James Harden, right? Now, Mike likes to talk about the Heat culture and all that stuff. How much time does James Harden have left on his contract? Does anyone know?
3 years. 3 years.
Three.
Okay. So if you could essentially exchange, don't worry about the numbers, just hypothetically speaking, you trade one person for James Harden, but with it goes all of the Heat culture and the family and all of that stuff. Would you be willing to trade just Udonis Haslam for James Harden? But with it, you lose all of the family, hardworking, respect, all
everything.
Of that forever
wow,
for
yeah.
3 years
I
of
lose,
James Harden.
I lose the hardest working, best conditioned, toughest, most hated.
Just one for one.
You keep Hero. You keep Hero, though.
Billy, I wouldn't trade that for LeBron.
Billy, I love that you've decided to take this conversation to some sort of weird genie place where a genie, I want everyone in the audience to imagine a genie who looks like Billy, an anarchist.
It's Billy's
genie.
Trade machine. Numbers line up.
Okay, so let's just say, yes.
The cap number on culture matches up.
For the purposes of this hypothetical, this is what I want you to imagine. I imagine also, by the way, at some point in the future that Angel Resto will be able to make a drawing of this particular genie Billy, and we will be able to sell those T-shirts immediately. A scared genie. But I want you to emerge from the bottle, and as an anarchist, what you're saying is this is the deal. you have to trade Udonis Haslem for James Harden. And that's obviously about as absurd a trade as anyone could possibly imagine. But the result is Mike has to shut the bleep up for the rest of his life about the idea that the Heat have a better culture than everyone else. And not only that, but you're saying the actual culture has to also leave, right? You're saying, Billy, that it's not just the talking about the culture and annoying people. You're saying that it will no longer be a disciplined team, a disciplined atmosphere.
Well, you lose that. You lose all the family, the loyalty and all that because UD has given up more than anyone else, I think, for this team and to stay here, right? So you lose all that loyalty. You lose all that mythology about the Heat do things the right way, first-class organization, blah, blah, blah. Is it worth it for James Harden?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't give that up for anybody.
Mike, you're out of your mind. You are out of your head.
You attack me over the culture stuff and being annoying.
Shut up.
You realize I got the winning hand, right? They just went to the NBA Finals and went to a game
six.
Well,
that's the second place hand.
Well, it's still pretty good, and you have like the what if in play with Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo. Like, Mike. I think they've proven time and time again that there's something legitimate to it.
Well, they have one ring without LeBron. So.
Add James Harden to that team, though.
James Harden is a very complicated player, and it goes just beyond the culture
stuff. It's why it's a great question, Mike. It's really why I think what Billy's asking is such a great hypothetical sports radio question. Because and there's Billy in the Zoom being
that's
the
I come out of my bottle.
I want you to imagine a genie emerging like a cobra in a snake charmer's basket. That's what Billy is doing in the Zoom right now. But it is a great question because James Harden is almost the antithesis to everything they represent. There are very few players of that kind of excellence that you get with a pot belly because he's in the strip club at Lil Baby's party often.
Look what's leaking out. There isn't even a dash of get me to Miami. And you think James Harden doesn't want to be in Miami, like the city? He absolutely would love to be in the city of Miami. He's making Houston fun, and Houston sucks.
I find the part of this question transactionally to be interesting. Let's get back to the hypothetical. But if you know you can't have Giannis, and the Heat will know before any of us, right? Because all of these things.
I think he's got like, what, 6 days?
With agents and everyone else. But if you know that Plan B's already in place, it's not Giannis. You're not saving cap money anymore. You're not doing this Myers-Leonard deal because you want to have a tradable, movable piece that fits in other contract, in other trade talks. It's real now. You know, as an organization, you're not getting Giannis. Now the question becomes, do you go into the next three seasons banking on $50 million a year for James Harden?
Is there a plan C we're not thinking of? Is there an
option?
Yes. Yes. Here's plan C that no one's talking about. And when you see the scheduling and when you see the title predictions and you see the Eastern Conference, no one is talking about this possibility. The fact that the Miami Heat can improve. The fact that Bam Adebayo's numbers, when you line them up against Giannis Antetokounmpo, are favorable to Bam in year three. The fact that they did this with a 20-year-old Tyler Hero, who, yes, if I had to bet on it, I don't think Tyler Hero is an MVP candidate. But I think he's an all-star. I think he can continue to improve. I think this Miami Heat team can certainly be better. I think they were a year ahead of schedule. That's also here. The fact that they were good enough.
I was talking to Riley actually last night. Because he has been sort of instrumental as a guide for me career-wise many years ago, for the Rob Report. Does that magazine still exist? And a magazine just for rich people.
Oh, really? I thought you were talking about World Wide Wob.
A Rob Report. Does that magazine, is that still around?
Never heard of
it. I was doing a story.
That was Rob Schneider's thing.
Yeah. I was doing a story on Riley for that magazine. And
Rob's an acronym for something? What is it?
I don't know what it was. They called me rich. It was actually one of the first freelance pieces. I couldn't believe they paid me as much as they did for it. And it wasn't actually that much, I would later learn through magazine standards. But at the time, I was like, are you kidding me? I can make X amount of money, whatever it was, $1,000 to write a cover story?
I have good news. They even have an app. The Rob Report is still, with two Bs, still around.
Yep, alive and well.
And so what I was saying to Riley, because he's been instrumental in this regard, because he told me way back then, you know, at the height of creativity changing in life, the most ambitious set of goals that someone should have is every 10 years, just totally change careers. Go from, so nothing ever gets spoiled through life, so you're always inspired, so you're always hungry, so you don't get lazy. Change careers every 10 years. And so I have actually tried to do some of that, right? I was a newspaper guy for 10 years, a television guy for 10 years, television and radio, and now is sort of the next step for us, wherever it is that we end up, however it is that we end up. And I was talking to him about every stop along the way, Stu Gatz. Pat Riley has shown up to be one of the first interviews when I've been doing things. There's a really touching story. He really moved me one time because he went to Hialeah to our little dump, highly questionable.
Right.
He initially said no to that. And then I told him, hey, Pat, I just want you to understand the spirit and the nature of what I'm doing here. This is something to be shared with my father. I know what your relationship is with your son. This is late in life. He had actually declined already, said, I shouldn't be doing that. That's not something I should be doing. And then I just told him about what I was doing with my father, and he showed up the next day. He just showed up and like,
very cool,
and pretended. I missed the cameos so much on that show from the beginning, if you've never seen them. The end of that show, we just did Highly Questionable Normal, and at the end of the show, I asked, Dad, what did you like about the show the best today? And he's like, well, that Pat Riley was sitting next to me the entire show. And then the camera pans out, and it's just Pat Riley sitting there, and he just fist bumps him with a giant ring.
Riley's always been there for you. I mean, he's the only guy who showed up to the Art of Conversation.
Mike Tyson also showed up. Mike Tyson also showed up. Not to bring up a sore subject on where everything went south.
This is the second.
You're not sorry, asshole. You did this to me yesterday. You're not any kind of actual sorry. You apologized to me during a break for saying something three times, and then your first chance to say it on air, you said it.
Yeah, all you can do is apologize. It's up to you.
No, all you can do is learn something and not make the mistake that requires the insincere apology.
Sorry.
I think you pulled off an exit ramp there and never actually got to the point with Pat Riley, which I think to this day of this week is the second best name drop outside of Larry Bluestein.
The point of the whole story is that we'll be able to talk about this with Riley very soon. Like the questions you're asking about.
So your next career is going to be a basketball player.
This Rob report I'm going through, I don't know what any of this stuff is. It's incredible. There's a trampoline bed. Why would you need that?
Tell us more. Tell us more. Have you never heard of the Rob report before right now, Billy? So there's
no,
also
the only 2B Rob I've ever heard of is Rob Nen. And I don't even know if that was a 2B Rob or a 2N Nen.
That's a good
I just
question.
Know there was double something.
Well, there's definitely two N's in Nen, right? I think so Rob was a single B Rob.
No,
Rob yeah.
One in and in. One in and in.
Billy, are you aware that one of my introductions to Rich People magazines involves Benito Santiago?
Go on.
I walk into a locker room and he's just there reading a magazine and I don't know what it is. And the reason he's reading the magazine is because he's trying to purchase a blue dog that only rich people can buy. I don't know how there was a blue dog. I don't know why there was a blue dog. To this day, I was confused. I don't know why Benito Santiago wanted a blue dog. I suspect just to say that he bought a rich people's dog.
Did he get it?
I never saw it. I never even understood it. Please look on the internet for the existence of a blue dog. Like if that's a thing that exists, because I was confused by it. I thought it was a fake magazine. Gatz, we got to get to Billy's genie point, though. What is the name of this genie, Billy? Like, I like this character for you. You popping out and offering these absurd hypotheticals about whether or not... Chris, would you trade...
Absurd. Chris, why is this absurd?
Would you trade... Well, because you can't trade a culture for a player.
Well, no, and I put it in my trade machine bottle, and it came out, and things are even.
But you are trading the player that embodies the culture in Udonis Haslam.
But the part that I love best about the hypothetical, Mike, is that it's not a hypothetical. If you trade for James Harden, you will forever be harming your culture. Like, you will be literally almost...
It becomes his culture.
You will be trading your culture for James Harden, and he might wreck your franchise in a way that makes everyone leave like they're leaving in Houston.
Can I just say, I already feel it. Like, I think I'm being positioned as the guy that wouldn't take James Harden. I'm going to come out here with this hot take. I don't know. I don't know how he fits stylistically. I don't know how he fits culturally. I don't even know how he fits with the salary cap. And even if they can do it, I think they can trade their 2025 and 2027 trades. But it's something that I have to trust the organization in making the best possible decision with. That's why I'm a Heat fan, and that's why they've proven it time and time again.
You sound silly. I got to be honest with you. You have no idea what Tyler Herro is going to become. I'm talking about the realistic trade here. You have no. I can tell you what he's not going to become. The MVP of the NBA. That's what he's not going to become.
I honestly don't think you can say that with certainty. He's a 20-year-old. He's just a boy. And you see the names that he put that playoff performance up with. Every single one of them is good. I know it's a small sample with Tyler Herro, but I don't think Tyler... The trajectory... This isn't the NFL where someone can fall off their second year, really.
I love, like Carson Wentz, I want to get into that at some point because I haven't seen a whole lot of times where that's happened. Hey, we're going to make you the highest paid player in the league. What? You can't play? At your position, we're going to make you the highest paid at the quarterback position, and all of a sudden you can't play. But I need to direct this toward Chris and Billy because, and Stu Gatz is ever exasperating on this front, lest you think that he's always playing a character. He goes right back to the trade, even though Billy's giving you the hypothetical genie making a ridiculous trade conversation that engages.
Well, I was going off of Mike's point there.
We just did this, and it worked out not making the trade. We did this with Russell Westbrook. Everybody on this Zoom wanted Russell Westbrook, and they wanted to give up Bam and Tyler Herro. You wanted to do this, and you realized that it would have been bad.
I'm digging deeper into this Rob report now, and I'm curious if rich people were promised things that most people aren't, because there's an article that says how NASA is working to give us the flying taxis we were promised. Who was promised flying taxis?
Oh,
where
I feel
are these
like
conversations been, going on?
I feel like they've been promising flying cars and taxis for nearly a decade
since
now.
The Fifth Element. No,
like, let's get to them already.
How about this? We give up Haslam, we keep the culture, but we throw in Olynyk.
You can't have the culture without Haslam. That's the point.
Yeah. No deal.
No
deal.
He's the soul of the team. You're trading your soul for James
Harden. You are selling your soul for James Harden. That's why
for three years of him.
That is why I think it's such a funny question, because I think it is actually, Mike. I think it's an if your plan B is Bam, Jimmy, and Harden. If you're saying basically, hey, our window is now Riley's 3 year window. We're going to go early 30s, Harden, Butler. Those are old players. We're literally going to trade our future, Tyler Herro, in order to plan B, 3 years of all in. That's a good threesome. I don't know.
It's a great threesome.
I trust Spo to figure out how to make all that stuff work together, don't you?
I think you'd be stunned at the amount of GMs that just said, hey, James Harden at this cap number, Tyler Herro at this cap number, fantasy draft, who you taking while you're building your franchise. I think you'd be stunned at the people that just go, let me take Tyler Herro.
I am not disputing that he represents value, Mike, which changes this equation. But what if I tell you, Pat Riley, he's late 70s.
Yeah. This is it.
Like, he's got to do it now.
He had to do it now last season, and he didn't, and it worked out for him. So I think he's kind of feeling himself in terms of trusting the players that he drafted with Bam and Tyler Herro. If I had to rank him, you're forcing me right now, I'd go, the plan is Giannis at all costs, whatever it costs you. If it costs you Tyler, even if it costs you Bam, even though that's not realistic, get Giannis. He is a talent, and the Miami Heat can absolutely make him better and he can
young.
Buy in.
And
he's young. He's perfect. That's obviously number one with a bullet. Backup plan B, to me, shouldn't be Harden. It should be, let's ride this thing out. Let's run it back.
But to Dan's point, Riley's getting older, and Tyler Herro, maybe he will become James Harden. I doubt it, but maybe he will become that, Mike. You have a chance to get James Harden right now.
The last time, Mike, you were arguing on behalf of ride this out, let's bet on this, it was Deion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside. They won eight. Mike, I'm
fallacy.
Saying.
Fallacy. It was last year where
Mike,
I said Bam Adebayo could be an all-star.
Mike, the last time the Miami Heat chose let's ride this hot hand, it ended in the disaster of Hassan Whiteside. Half a season as sample. You're now using a bubble season, a pandemic season as sample. They used half a season, and they bet on Waiters and Whiteside.
Yeah, they learned the lessons of that. They botched that. And there were plenty of fans saying, you can't let this person go. I was probably first in line in that regard. They have to be smarter than Mike Ryan is what I would say. And number two, that's not the last time.
Is there such a person?
No, no.
Is there such a person?
Not smart?
They, what?
No.
Mike, that's an impossible standard on the Miami
Heat. I know.
They have to be smarter than Mike Ryan?
It's hard.
I mean, it's not hard. It's impossible. Hard. They'd be a dynasty. they'd be an eternal dynasty that never lost a game. They'd be the 72 Dolphins every season.
But it's just a fallacy. They were seriously interested in bringing in Russell Westbrook, and they just wouldn't do it. They couldn't bring themselves up to giving those pieces that now with James Harden, you're doing the exact same thing, even though you've seen those pieces fulfill promise.
What is happening here? We have a rookie who came off a great run in a bubble, and we're not trading him for the league MVP. What is going on here?
All right, how about this? We keep the culture. We give up Spo and Eric Reed.
Wow, Eric Reed?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This has escalated quickly.
No deal. Yeah. Things don't weigh out.
I'm totally with you. Maybe Haslam, but I'm taking Reed out of the deal.
Japan's going to have flying cars in 2023.
You keep Haslam.
Right.
You can keep some of the culture. But you trade Riley for Harden.
He's old.
Mike, is that you're talking about Harden there, right, Chris? You are looking at your computer, and that's a reported thing?
Well, when you were
flying
talking about
taxis
it.
In 2023? Well, I'm making that up.
Not flying taxis. I knew that I remembered reading an article last week about Japan testing a flying car successfully, and their whole idea is it went so well is they want to make this a realistic thing by 2023. So flying car is not that far away.
The flying car seems to be the easy part. How do you deal with it does. I know it sounds crazy, but like what? Like where are we going? There are buildings around. Like, has anyone thought this through?
Thank you,
Billy. Like, who's pulling you over if you're going too fast?
Flying cars is the end of humanity. That's the end of the human race. People can't manage to drive in straight lines with little lines drawn on the road telling them exactly where to be driving without crashing into each other and harming each other. You think that they're going to be able to be flying cars by themselves? What height are they going to be flying at? They're going to be crashing midair, then falling down onto people on the ground, minding their own business, walking their dogs, driving on the roads like they were meant to be driving. All of a sudden, you have people and things just flying out of the sky, fenders and turbines and whatever else makes things move in the air.
All right, put it on the pole, Guillermo. Well, turbines is very scary. You're just walking along, you're playing in a soccer game, and a turbine falls out of the sky. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying, but put it on the pole. Are flying cars destined to ensure the end of humanity? Is that how you said it? The death of all human beings?
Yes.
And also, because I want to go down this path, you said 10 years. We've been talking about flying cars for 10 years. What is the first movie depiction that you can remember of flying cars? Not cartoon like the
Jetsons. Not the Jetsons.
Not the Jetsons, no. But like
Back to the Future, maybe? Did that car fly?
1984. I mean, it time traveled. It didn't fly.
No, it flew.
Did it fly?
I think it did, yeah. Yeah.
It took flight?
Yeah, I think it did.
The end of the first movie and all of the second movie.
Roy, you are amazing. It is Rain Man shit with you, Roy, in that you
I mean, did you see the end of the movie?
Like the way that you have a compartment in your brain for all of this stuff. It's a totally clogged room, but you have all of it in there. Every time, it's the most confidence I ever see you exhibit at anything. Is knowing mundane detail from any movie.
A train flew in part three. A train.
What?
The DeLorean was with 1980s tech, right? And then they go to the past and it's still driving. But when they go to the future, Doc upgrades the tech and then it becomes a flying car, which is what you see at the end of Back to the Future 1.
You are right, though. I only knew it was Back to the Future. Roy knows exactly when and where it's in the movie and then carries over to the sequel. It's insane.
You know what, Mike? I think at some point here, we actually have to quiz Roy in a way on some of his movie knowledge because I think, would you be willing to do that, Roy? I think that would actually be an interesting segment, just the mundane shit that Roy has in his brain that we've never, ever been able to do anything with other than this thing of pointing at him and saying, wait a minute, he's a bit of a savant here.
I mean, it's easy to know when it happened in the movie, Stu Gatz. It was the end of the movie.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It is an old movie. It's 1984, is right? Back to the Future is what I'm thinking.
Roy, who starred in I Come in Peace?
Dolph Lundgren and Brian Benben from Dream On. What? You ever seen that show?
Wow.
Okay, wait. All right, hold on.
He couldn't have Googled that.
How did he pull Brian Benben?
I thought for sure you were going to go Jay Billis.
Mike, I'm telling you that Roy, this is an this is an undiscovered talent that has been neglected around here for far too long. I believe that Roy, without looking anything up, will be, if he's seen the movie, right? Like, it's not fair to do it to him if he hasn't seen the movie.
Obviously,
or doesn't know what we're talking about. But his recall and retention, I believe it to be genius level for crud like that. Because Mike Ryan just referenced a terrible movie that Jay Billis was in with Howie Long. And
Howie Long, no, it was Brian Benben.
Anyway, whatever. It was Jay Billis, Brian Benben, and who was the first person you said? I've already forgotten, and you remember that.
Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, that's right. Dolph Lundgren, of course.
Jesus Christ. How? How do you know?
You know what's interesting is that I Come in Peace was actually called Dark Angel, but in the marketing, since it's become known as I Come in Peace, the name has changed, Dan.
It's not? What do you mean it's changed?
Because there's movie posters that say Dark Angel. But then there are later movie posters of it being referenced as I Come in Peace. And when you search the IMDb, you see evidence of this. This is actually not that rare a thing. There was a Tom Cruise movie. What's a movie where he kept like dying? The sequel is going to be called. Like,
oh, maybe Roy will get this.
Live, Die, Repeat
or something like that. The movie where he kept dying again and again.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. I like that movie.
Edge of Tomorrow was the movie. However, if you see it like on DVD covers and the marketing since its theatrical release, it's sort of become known as Live, Die, Repeat, which is why the sequel is just going to be called that.
Howie Long was, of course, in Broken Arrow.
Yes, I love that movie.
You what?
I love
it's
Broken
a good movie.
Arrow.
Travolta.
That was like John Woo's heyday. Because that's everyone realized, okay, John Woo is a force to be reckoned with at this point. And then they teamed back up, John Travolta and John Woo, for the classic film Face Off.
And Christian Slater. I mean, one of his finest roles. Seriously.
Fantastic. It opens with that boxing match, that sparring match between Christian Slater and John Travolta, the overhead, and the cinematography, the score. Oh, what a tremendous film.
What was the peak of John Woo? Like, was it Face Off?
Face Off for me.
That is the peak? That is the highest? What happened to him since, Mike? Like, what would you say?
Paycheck, probably, with Ben Affleck.
Mike, Mission Impossible? No?
He did Mission Impossible, too. After the success of Face Off, and John Woo was known as, like, this is the best action director going on right now. You know what Tom Cruise did? He motorcycled in and said, I want that guy for Mission Impossible 2. Mission Impossible 2, when you watch back all the films in sequential order, really which good. I do, like, every other month, Mission Impossible 2 is the only film in the series where Ethan Hunt is not disavowed by his own government.
So John Woo, since Face Off, the only movie of substance that he has done that wows people in, what, 2 decades? Is Mission Impossible 2? Where's he gone?
Mission Impossible.
When do directors that good disappear
His style never really evolved. It was always sort of campy, and it was fun for the 90s, and it had a thing, but then, like, how are you going to force birds into every movie, John Woo?
He did in Face Off. There were so many birds. Those scenes seem like a real pain in the ass, just throwing a bunch of doves in your face.
So he's gone back to his homeland and created, you know, movies designed for the Asian marketplace.
But he hasn't made mainstream American success movies.
Like Paycheck wasn't good.
No, Paycheck wasn't good. Yeah. Wind Talkers was a flop when he tried to team back up with Nicolas Cage.
Well, tell me this, guys, because when I think of directors, right, the list of directors that you will watch anything they do, it's Tarantino, it's Scorsese, it's Wes Anderson, it's the Coen brothers, how many more?
I'll seek out
Spielberg.
Yeah, Spielberg, man, he's got some duds on his. I'll seek out David Fincher, and Michael Mann's become strangely one of my. I've become obsessed.
Didn't he
with
just
Michael
make
Mann.
A movie that you thought was better than Heat?
Collateral, but that was like 20 years ago. But I want to do a podcast series, and maybe I shouldn't give this idea away.
Don't give it away.
Okay, I've read absurd things about the filming of Miami Vice. I've become obsessed.
Well, Ron McGill did stuff for Miami Vice. He can tell us some of those stories.
I have become obsessed with the production of Miami Vice. There was a point in the production of Miami Vice, I don't want to give everything away, that Jamie Foxx flatly refused to be a part of the film anymore. He left because of the crazy circumstances regarding this production. They had to rebuild an entire set in Miami, and when they rebuilt the entire set in Miami, a hurricane hit the production and glass almost killed Colin Farrell. It was crazy. They went to a totally lawless place on the planet because macho man Michael Mann insisted they do it, and the stories from this set are insane.
Did you guys like that movie, the remake of Miami Vice, with Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx? Did Chris, Billy, Roy, Tony, any? It was what, 2006?
I never saw the original or the remake.
It was terrible. It was a bad movie, just bad morale, and you could tell it. Like, it goes through the screen. But everyone on that movie almost died multiple times.
I didn't see that movie, shockingly. I didn't see it. I mean, it right the first time with the TV series. I couldn't see it again.
Well, I will sometimes, gosh, I could talk about this for so long. I will sometimes, just to go back, I don't know that I do this with any other show. I will go back to Miami Vice. It was so groundbreaking as a television show, Stugatz, back in those days when you're talking about a couple of network channels and, wait a minute, glossy and movie budget type stuff, and wait, music?
Yep.
Cool music? And who are these amazingly cool people, Don Johnson and Ricardo Tubbs, who were taking Miami to the country? Look at Roy. Look at the smile on Roy's face. Roy, you remember, how old were you during this shit? Because it was such a funny show to watch. It was absolutely the first time that Miami had ever been depicted, or anything that it was Miami flavor had been depicted outside of Que Pasa USA. Since probably Desi Arnaz's character in I Love Lucy. It's the first time I looked at a television and I'm like, oh, wait, I recognize that, and that's a cool place.
Well, since you said Don Johnson, Ricardo Tubbs' real name is Philip Michael Thomas, and the show started in 84, so I was zero, actually. That was when I was born.
Yeah, but I don't doubt you know everything about it. Who was your favorite Miami Vice villain, and why is it Liam Neeson?
It is Liam Neeson. Actually, it might be Phil Collins.
Phil Collins was
you're
a
right,
great villain.
You're right. It was appointment viewing, man. It made me want to move to Miami, that show. It
really?
It was that show and then watching the Miami Hurricanes. I'm like, man, it looks fun down there.
It looks crazy.
It's hard to explain to people what our audience, Roy, there is next to no one listening to this right now, especially if you're just someone who's listening on podcasts, which skews much younger. Who knows what we're talking about here in terms of I will tune into that show. What I'm saying to you is one of the great things that I have loved about the creative birth of everything around us, because this is the content golden era, Stugatz, in terms of you could turn on this magic box and you could watch anything from the past.
Crazy.
I will go to Miami Vice and just be hypnotized. Like when I try it with Dukes of Hazzard, it's awful. Like, because it just doesn't hold up and it's stupid. But Miami
Vice is still getting it done
well,
for you?
It was just so far ahead of its time. It's not getting it done. It's pretty terrible. But through a child's eyes, there's a reason Michael Mann chose specifically to remake that show, given the age that he was and given what Miami Vice meant to him.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I do think Michael Mann was associated with the production of the TV show. So it was a passion project for him. And he got two stars in the movie that were sort of at the height of their powers, so in demand at that time. They hated each other. There is that classic scene, if you can call any scene from that film a classic, where the Asian lead speaks to Colin Farrell's character and says, oh, let's get a drink. And he's like, I know the perfect place. Let's grab a mojito. And they drive a boat to Cuba.
Michael Mann created the TV show.
There you go.
Just ask Roy, Mike. Yeah, don't have any doubt. Man, dude.
You get to keep UD. You get to keep Riley. But you can never watch Miami Vice again.
Whoa.
No way.